Welcome to The Horse, a show hosted by longtime UConners Dan Bushnell and Jenny Hamilton. On this show, we talk to a diverse collection of people about living in the Yukon, what brought them here, why they stay or have left, but mostly, we like to talk about what truly makes them tick. So sit back, relax, turn up the volume, and enjoy the show coming to you from the Yukon's capital, Whitehorse, or as it's known to the locals, The Horse.
You know, and I think it's interesting for me because, like, I'm really introverted. And a lot of people don't know that about me because I don't come across that way. But if you guys have all seen me in the shop, I will often dictate the flow and shape of conversation. But I'm doing it because if I'm in control of the conversation, I'm choosing what you will know about me and what you won't. So I'm protecting myself by putting up a seemingly extroverted wall. I can create a barrier between us through the way I choose to talk to you. And it's a trick that I've picked up over the years to manage to stay engaged with people while protecting myself and actually being introverted. And I think it throws people, for sure, because people have this expectation of me and have made a judgment of me based on a public persona or a public image that I put out, which is not really who I am. And anyone that's spoken to me one on one can tell you that, you know, because you do see a difference. So I think it's interesting too that when we can't, like, I was thinking about lying and what people do when they're lying, because someone said to me, and I think that this does hold true, that when people lie, it shows a greater understanding of the overall issue, because the person's anticipating your reaction and they're tailoring what they say based on what they've anticipated as your reaction. And I understand where that comes from, but I think it negates you as an individual, and it takes away they've decided how you're going to react. And if you did that to me, and you were having a real conversation with me, and you did that to me based on having only met me a couple of times, I guarantee you, you'd be wrong. And I think sometimes we have to give people credit, and the credit is being honest with them. We give them the credit to react in a way that we might not expect, to react in a way that we might not anticipate. And I think, like, part of going through something difficult and learning is we learn how to accept that other people might surprise us, might open doors that we don't expect, might have a contribution that we don't anticipate. And
good or bad, right? Like, surprise, good or bad. And that keeps us living in the moment, because otherwise, like you're saying, if we're constantly looking for the reaction we want, we're just living in the future, living in the future, living in the future, instead of letting what is actually be. And yeah, that's a really good point.
Well, so I think it's a lot easier to live in the past or to look at what's coming next rather than being super present. And I think part of what we were talking about earlier with listening and just wanting someone to listen to you, right? And wanting to feel that you've been heard, I think is living in the present. I think in order to ask someone to really hear you, they have to be very, very present. They have to be really there, and they have to be in that moment with you. And that's when we have our truest results with people.
And living in the moment is being okay to feel whatever it is that you're feeling, right? And so, or whatever the person's going to be saying, whatever your reaction will be, because we're constantly trying to avoid feeling bad. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're living in the past or the future. And in this moment, being okay, whether it's feeling good or bad or whatever it is. And my brother has done a PhD in neuropsychology and emotion. And so I've gotten to benefit from the information that he's been learning. And I've learned so much about emotions through him that all they want is to be felt. So yes, feel them, and they will leave. Yeah. No matter if it's good or bad. And mm-hmm. we're just so So we're trying to dictate how we're going to feel and what our life's going to look like and what people are going to say all of the time. It's like, no, then all of the stuff that's supposed to be felt gets trapped and it never actually gets felt. Yeah. And so I've spent so much time in the last little while feeling my feelings, whatever they are, and saying, you know, stay as long as you need to stay and then move along.
Well, like, so you said that you recently went through a split up. I was talking earlier, I recently went through a split up. And I've had days in the last even couple of weeks where I've just woken up and been in tears again. And it's been almost 3 months. Yeah. And there are some days where I feel like, oh, you should just be over this. And then as soon as I say that to myself, I think, well, that's not good self-love. That's not good self-care.
And it's just going to prolong
it. And
then
it's just going to prolong it. And what has been one of the most integral parts of the days that I feel that way is that I reach out to a friend that knows me and loves me. And I say, I'm having a bad day and I'm still having a hard time with it. And for them to just hear that and say, that's okay. Even like, not that I should need that invitation for it to be okay, but just when you're on that path and you're building that self-care and self-love, to just have that from someone that's really integral in your life, to be accepted for that, starts to help you accept who you are. Absolutely. But something that you said, Dan, that I think I personally would love to hear from everybody about, it because we all have public personas. Everybody here, you know, in what we do.
Really true,
and so I'm, because you just shared the way that people view you and how you truly, and who you truly believe you are. And so, yeah, I wondered if maybe everybody wanted to share theirs.
So interesting. Yeah, no, I love that. That is great.
Like, Jenny, you always have to be funny, right?
Well,
you are always funny.
I try to be funny. It's how I coped. It's not how I cope in life now. But it was something that kept me from getting beat up as a kid. Sometimes it encouraged the beatings. I've just got that thing in my brain that I'm told other comedians have, that you could be going through tragedy, absolute tragedy, and yet at the same time you're seeing the funny in it. It's a curse. I mean, you don't say it. You learn, catalog that for later, right? When everybody else has had some time. But I can't be on all the time. That's why I got into comedy. Well, plus, you know, Anthony's like, you can do it. And I thought, well, I'll do it once. But that's why I stay in comedy. Because I like to look at the world, try to understand it, and then take the pressure out of it. Because if I don't do that for myself, like, I don't know if I could handle the world without seeing the joys, the funny in it, even in the tragedies. Just how I see it. And typically my life is I'm the butt of the joke, because that's where I get my comedy from. How do I react to this? Usually not in an appropriate way. At home, I'm, if I'm not writing comedy or thinking of that stuff, I'm trying to create with my hands. Because that's how I learn. I'm a visual learner. I like to fix things. I like to make things. And I'm not always funny. Like, I love doing this kind of stuff because you get to hear the other side of it. My brain won't shut up. And sometimes that's why I work with my hands, is to calm myself and go, okay, this is what I'm doing here.
Do you feel like when you run into people who know who you are, they expect a certain side of you?
Well, like I said, very few people know that, A, I can do anything but be a goof. So I'm lucky enough in this town that people are, oh, you're hilarious. And that's usually as far as the joke goes. I'll come and visit Dan because I call this sanctuary. But it's mostly because my wife's like, you need to go to Dan's, because it's been a week and I have not been around people. And she's like, okay, you're having a conversation with a cat and now you're answering for him? Like, because I tend to go into a cave. And then bat the light downstairs, and can get really dark really fast if I'm not putting myself out there. And I just like to be around. I don't always have to be talking. When I do, I try to lighten it, because usually Dan's leading the conversation, and we'll just go there. Let's go have some fun, because that's what I enjoy doing. Because if I spend too much time alone, it can get really dark really quick. So for me to cope with that, I take the dark I see and then process the shit out of it, break it apart, and try to find the humanity in it. And with humanity, there's always hope, there's love and laughter. Mm-hmm. And I try to, and then I try to present that, because then we have that in common. Or I'll find something that people just go, holy shit, where are you coming from? Because they don't find that in common at all. And that's okay, too. Mm-hmm. Those are harder to find, though. We have a lot more in common than, yeah. than we'll admit. Mm-hmm. Many people was like, I can't believe you said that. Yeah, but you've thought it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they just can't believe you said that out loud.
Into a microphone on,
in front of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and Stephanie, like, of anyone in this room, you have such an easily spottable, visible presence, right? Because as soon as people look at you, they go, oh, there's a woman with one leg. Mm-hmm. And they're going to approach you based on that. And how have you moved through that? Like, how do you move through the world like that? Mm-hmm. And do people get to see who you are? Like, because are you an Olympian? Are you a disabled person? Are you a personal trainer? Like, who are you to people when they first meet you?
I think that I'm really fortunate to have been born with a disability, because people stare at me all the time and I don't notice, because it's normal for me. And you hear that a lot from people who've acquired a disability, who it's like you go through the world relatively invisible and then suddenly you're very, very visible. And that's a really hard thing to overcome. And so I'm very thankful I never had to deal with that. I was forced into the spotlight. And so it was a real positive thing that made me feel like, okay, instead of wanting to hide the things I'm ashamed of, I'm going to deal with them instead. So it forced me to be very, I can get naked physically, emotionally, mentally now and feel comfortable with it, because I was forced into a very, very visible place. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to do that, it's going to be on my terms and I'm going to feel good with it. So I think growing up, it was really, really tough. Like, my teenage years were brutal for that. And for people, it's the pity that comes first. You see somebody on crutches missing a limb, pity's the first thing that every human thinks of. It's biological, it's natural. And that's really tough. And before, I wouldn't have the confidence to then be me to override that initial thought that people would have. And so I went into a shell for a very long time, and I wore a prosthetic leg my whole life until I was 28. And so I could kind of get away with people thinking, oh, I'm just limping or something like that. Unless I was doing sports, and then it was just blown wide open. But yeah, it's such an interesting one. I'm kind of going all over the place with this. But now I would say that I have the confidence to override the pity or not self-doubt, but the doubt that's imposed upon me by other people about what I'm able to do. It depends on the person who I am to them. So some people will feel sorry for me no matter what I say or do, and I just can't let it bother me. Other people put me up on a pedestal, and I'm clearly the most inspiring person in the entire world because I'm making it through life with one leg. Some people think I'm always positive all the time because I'm the happy, bubbly girl with one leg who just blah, 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 blah. But now I'm at a place in my life where I'm confident enough that those don't penetrate me anymore. And if I'm having a bad day, sometimes people's shitty comments will piss me off. But in general, I'm owning who I am instead of letting the disability own me. Hmm. I don't know. That's a lot of lull.
Well, no. I mean, and in not letting the disability own you, you don't let the way that people look at you own you.
Exactly. But it had to come from both sides, because people were giving me so much. Like, some people put me up on such a pedestal and thought I was just the greatest thing ever. And other people just doubted everything that I could do and felt sorry for me. And so now I have to discard the good with the bad, in terms of, like, if someone thinks, oh, wow, you're so awesome. You can't pick and choose when you own other people's opinions. Mm-hmm. So, which is a good thing. It's really, really good, because I think it's easy when you're someone who's accomplished something, like, especially on an international stage, to purely have your self-worth be dictated by the validation coming from your accomplishments, from other people thinking you're great. And especially doing public speaking, I mean, I was just in a room of 300 people who just told me I was the greatest thing ever for, you know, a day and a half. And that can make you feel so good, but you can't own it. You can't, because that's their stuff. They only know a very, very small part in you. So now I don't own the negative stuff, the pity part, and I also don't own the good stuff. because by you hearing a very small part of my life and thinking I'm the greatest thing ever, that is equally as invalid as someone thinking that I'm not capable because I have a disability by seeing one side of me. And so I think it's just learning to, no matter who they are, if they don't know me, and even if they do, then their opinion really doesn't get to count. Yeah, it's like force field around me, myself.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm going to have to call somebody and tell them what you just said, because that is... Because, I mean, I think that being in the public eye is fucking hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have a mutual friend that, we've talked about this before, they're going through a lot where they receive a lot of judgment. And it's like your friend that's transitioning right now. When you're in the spotlight in that way, you get a lot thrown at you. And you can't own it. Mm-hmm. But I think what needs to be said there, and I think what I really grabbed onto what you just said, was you can't own the good either. Mm-hmm. You can't let them tell you you're the greatest thing in the world, just like you can't accept the fact that you can't let them tell that you suck, right? Like,
and you want to accept the good stuff. It feels so good. It feels so good, but you can't.
That's huge.
Because you open yourself up for everything else that comes in the door. But that's why I live in the Yukon. So when I moved up here, the same day I got offered the coaching position, the head coaching position for the swim club here, and a sponsorship with Coke. And so one was taking me like spotlight central, and one was like in a small town in the north coaching kids. Mm-hmm. And so I chose the Yukon because, one, this town doesn't really give a shit who you are at the end of the day. Like, as much as living in Toronto or Calgary or Vancouver, it's not the same as down south from my experience. And also living in a cabin in the woods, like, nature doesn't give a shit what you've accomplished in your life. And so it's very, for me, very grounding. So I'll do some things in the spotlight outside of Whitehorse, but I really like coming back here and kind of just, doing my thing and grounding myself as well. It's a good balance.
Mm-hmm. And you're very famous here. Yeah. Like, everybody knows who you are.
Yukon famous, as they say.
No, but I mean, that's a different thing, because Stephanie can come back here to escape.
Yeah, I'm coming back here to be invisible, where you're here.
And whereas
to be very
you
visible.
Can be invisible here. Mm-hmm. No, and how is that?
I think for a while I could. For a while I could be invisible until I got the job with the magazine. Because it turns out my face is in there. So then a lot of people made the correlation, whether they already knew me from CBC or not. But suddenly I was a face to a name. On the radio, you can be a bit anonymous. Unless there was the odd person, and I do mean odd when I say it, that would recognize me by my voice. I don't know that I've done that for many people, but it's happened in a coffee shop. Yeah, it's... I don't necessarily... I feel like people think they know who I am, and I'm okay with that, because I think I am pretty authentic to who I am when I'm on the radio and in my editor's notes, because that's my chance to do it, and really no one is telling me how to be on the air. No one's really telling me what to write in that editor's note. I think the one thing I've recognized the most in my life over the last few months, and I've asked it from a number of people, including the person that I was just in a relationship with, and partially, I think, led ultimately to the end of our relationship, is that I find I ask and listen a lot. I do it for a living, but I need it too. I'm almost going to get emotional.
Yeah, no.
I need it too.
That's huge. That's huge.
And I don't get it a lot. Sorry.
No, it's thank you for being so open and vulnerable. That's so awesome, because we tend to assume roles with people. Mm-hmm. and it becomes a habit, and then suddenly we're always in that same role over and over and over again, and giving and giving and giving and not getting anything back.
Yeah.
I experienced that just in my last presentation, where I'm talking to 300 people and I was figuratively naked on stage, because I shared my deepest shames, my deepest insecurities and everything. I gave and I gave and I gave. I didn't get anything back from any one of them.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's what I've set myself up for.
Absolutely.
But afterwards, it leaves you feeling kind of...
a little drained.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. Exactly. Yeah. And so good for you for asking your friends and your family and people closest to you for what you need and recognizing that.
Yeah.
Because it is draining. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we also get to get something back from other people. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Well, and it's like you said about you can't always be on.
Yeah.
And so often, especially if I'm balancing both jobs, you know, I'm in at CBC all day and then magazine morning and night and everything else and balancing writers and photographers and all of it, then I just feel the need to be at home with a glass of wine. And sometimes I'll screen my phone calls or I'll just turn my phone off or, yeah, I just need to be a part of nothing.
Sometimes. Or have someone fill your cup.
Yeah.
Right? Like, be a part of nothing or have someone give to you.
Yeah.
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 And, you know, and that's like, it, I think because I'm not on the level of the three of you at all in terms of people knowing me. But people
have been in the past when you were down south.
For sure. And I think so. I get the advantage that you get here where I get to come up here and no one knows who the fuck I am.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, you're that tattoo guy. I went, okay, that's who I am for you, right? Like, I can be that. But at the end of the day here, we'll go shopping sometimes. I won't get out of the car. Sarah's like, oh, let's go into Superstore. And I'm like, you know what? I just don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it because I can't give any more of myself to anybody today. I've been giving myself to people all day. And if I give any more of myself today, I might break. Like, I can't be that right now. And so I need to just, I sit in the car and I hide because I can't give any more of myself at that moment. And I think like that for me, like knowing you, that's what I see with you as well. Is like, how do you, when you give so much every day and you're on for people all day and you have to be this person for them, at the end of the day, you can't give any more. And when you get into a situation with your friends or your partner where they're like, okay, I need this from you right now. Sometimes you just have to go, not right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, I don't have it right now. I can have it for you in 20 minutes. You know, like I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to listen to an audiobook for a few minutes. I'm going to change my clothes and sit on the end of the bed and just breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll come out and I can be there for you, but I need this space right now.
But I think it's really, really important to set that up at the beginning. People hate when you change the dynamic.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if it's unfair or not. If you change it, I am going through this so hard right now with a group of people where I set something up where it was supposed to be a group thing, but I just let it and went and went and went and went and went. And they got to a point, it's like, okay, this is our group. I'm going to need us to share the responsibility of this. And then it didn't come back. Because not everyone has that ability to give so hard all at once.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's an elite athlete thing. It's that type of a personality where I'm going to give all out and then I'm going to rest. And I'm going to go all out and I'm going to rest. And not everyone does that. They'll give maybe like 70% constantly throughout the day, you know, like at any 9-to-5 job type of thing would be. And this particular group or some people did not like this change of dynamic. Well, what do you mean you're not going to be giving and setting everything up? And even though it wasn't quite fair ever for it to be like that, that's the dynamic I set up. And when I wanted to change it, nobody liked it. And so I think it's in friendships, in group settings, your work, in a relationship, you set the precedent up straight away. It's really hard to change it, is what I have found.
Mm-hmm.
And in relationships as well, where you're like, well, actually, can we change this dynamic a little bit? They're like, well, that's not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
Well,
or sometimes people don't actually listen to what they're signing up for. I find because sometimes you'll say, this is who I am and this is what I need.
Yeah.
And
like, that's totally great.
No, absolutely. And that's what I need too. And then later.
Yeah. That's not it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've done that.
Yeah.
But you
don't know.
Well, and I had to learn the hard way not too long ago where what I would do is I would give and I would give and I would give and I would just keep giving. And I never rested. And then I said, hey, I need a rest. And they went, no, because you need to keep in giving. And then eventually my doctor went, do you want to live more than 6 more years? I said, oh, well, yeah. Then you can't give any more to these people ever again. Got. And it was a big choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about the dynamic freaking out?
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Here's my...
Yep.
I gave myself a pink slip.
Yeah, just have to walk
best
away.
Thing I did for myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like a horrible person. I felt like I was letting down the community and 300-400 people. And I thought, no. When I started, it was one thing. And then it progressed into, I don't actually want to be a part of. I feel like I need to because nobody else will. Wow, how special am I? They're fine. And I had to get myself in my headspace that if I leave this, this isn't going to fold like a house of cards. Mm-hmm. But I needed to rest.
Yep, that's it. And we're not good to anyone else if we don't have our full capacity. And so just being okay with that. But when we're people, all of us are people who offer a specific service, and it is very usually personal. How do you ever say no? You know, if someone wants a PCU, a party, and you're like, yeah, I want to give. But we just can't. There's only so much energy that we have. Mm-hmm. And if ever we set up healthy boundaries, we're like, you know, I really need to take care of me, and someone doesn't like that, we have to run. We have to run as fast and far as we can because it's not right.
Well,
it's
when we take the time to look after ourselves more, because like what we don't realize is that when we push too hard and when we keep pushing through things, the people that really truly care about us and really see us, they see us struggle and they see us being hurt by it. Mm-hmm. And what I think I don't realize sometimes is that when I push myself to the place where I'm hurting myself in that, I'm also hurting the people around me because they see me suffering and they see me putting myself in a place where I'm suffering. And I feel like I'm being a bit of a martyr sometimes where I'm just trying to carry the world on my shoulders. But what I don't realize in doing that, I'm actually hurting a bunch of other people.
Because other people will take the brunt of it. You know, we get short, we get tired.
And even just watching you do something. It's hard to see somebody you love doing something that, that you know is damaging to them.
Yeah, that's it.
You don't want to watch somebody you love hurt themselves. Nobody wants to see that. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when we take it too much on the chin like that, what we're actually doing is forcing other people to watch us be hurt. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to see you be hurt. And I think we have to realize that. And then when we move forward, we move through relationships, we have to come to the realization that through our neglect of ourselves, we're actually hurting the people that love us and the people that are around us and the people that truly see us. And we have to be careful because we actually, when you're in a relationship with somebody, whatever that relationship is, and where you care about each other, we have a responsibility to those people to look after their feelings in the same way that they have responsibility to us. And we have to acknowledge, like, and I'm not saying we're in charge of their feelings. What I'm saying is that, you know, I mean, I know all of you guys well enough that you know you're safe with me and I'm not going to go out of my way to hurt you. You know, I'm not going to say something to you that is going to be directly an attack or me trying to hurt you. And we have a trust amongst us that, you know, when you walk up and talk to me, I'm not going to do that. So we can be okay with each other. And I think that when we are hurting ourselves, what we're doing is we are not giving that trust back because we're then damaging somebody's feelings in a way that we shouldn't have.
Well, just recognizing that our behaviors affect other people, right? And
well, don't make it sound so much better than I made it sound. Show off?
Oh, it's Hallmark card.
Well, I found it interesting. I always thought I was helping everybody, right? Like, I'll pick up your slack. We're going to have this event. We're going to make this, we're collaborating. So I'd pick up the balls that were being dropped. And I thought I was helping. What I was finding was my limit. Mm-hmm. But what I ultimately came to realize is that I was stunting other people's growth by doing that because they never found their limit. They never got to succeed or fail. So I was totally messing with somebody else's life with all my good intentions, building a rift and resentment with each other and burning myself out. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's something you can only learn once you do it. Or just take my word for it right now.
You know what I find?
It's weird.
And what I think is super interesting, like in this same vein, is that when Jenny and I are like, oh, let's do a podcast. And I don't remember how it came about. We're like one of our many, like...
You wouldn't do stand-up comedy on stage.
Oh, yeah. And now whenever we're like, oh, you should come. You know, I say to people, you should come be on our podcast. Everyone always goes, oh. And I'm like, it's not funny. We don't do a funny podcast. It's not.
It could be at some point.
Sure. I mean, and it has its moments, I'm sure. But I mean, like, we, partly people have an expectation of us that it's going to be a certain way. And I find that, like, this is our sixth recording.
I think so.
And they're not funny. Like, we're, you know what I mean? Like, we're not cracking a bunch of jokes, right? Like, it's just not coming out that way. And who knew? Who knew it was going to go that way? And people always say, what's your podcast about? And I'm like, I have no idea.
It's about people.
I didn't know what was happening when I sat down.
Yeah.
I thought...
Yeah, I mean, and that's because, you know what? We're actually, like, I think we're just genuinely interested in people. And we're genuinely interested in what people are up to. And that's it. And it goes to where it's going to go.
Well, most of the podcasts that I even gravitate toward are, and I mean, it's connected to what I do for work. The reason why I wanted to become a journalist is because I wanted to tell other people's stories. And so I often listen to podcasts that where people are telling their stories, and sometimes in a very raw way or in conversations like this, because it, I don't know, it just helps me learn more about the human condition. Because like you said before, sometimes it's hard when people just think that you're always a happy person. Because I find that I get that expectation of myself a lot, because when I'm on the radio, everyone's like, oh, you sounded so chipper on the morning show this morning. When, you know, like I was on the morning show on Valentine's Day morning, the day after my boyfriend broke up with me.
Yeah.
And I sounded chipper, and I played a whole bunch of love songs and wanted to stab myself in the heart in between. Like, I have literally sat in the booth at CBC after having a really hard day personally, and I've cried during a song and then gone back on the air after the song and said that was so-and-so singing such-and-such, and let's go into this next interview. But it doesn't show. It's like the same we were talking before you got here about the cracks of social media and the sort of highlight reels that they can also be. Mm. And it's sort of those little bits and pieces where, yeah, people don't necessarily think. Like, I heard this the other day, someone talking about it, and I can't remember the source for it, but there's so many times, probably a podcast I was listening to learn more about the human condition, that there's people walk around often thinking, like, wow, you know, they've got it made. He's got it made. She's got it, you know, like, and when we all have stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
We all have stuff, and that's why we're all identifying with everything we're saying to each other right now, because we've just boiled it down to a few people who don't even all know each other all that well, but it's, look how much we're able to connect on the same things.
And that's part of the reason I wanted to do the podcast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I get older, I'm like, the art of conversation seems to be dying. I don't want to say dying, or just shortening. Like you said, the highlight reels. Mm-hmm. And to have a conversation makes us go, oh, we are a lot alike. Because I know there's a lot of people out there that think they're struggling, and nobody has else been through this before, because they're seeing the highlight reels and they're thinking less, and they can't find the joy in it, even if there's joy in their life right now. So let's talk to each other.
Yeah.
And the more we talk to each other, the less divided we are. Because that's another thing, you know, you can get into politics of it. It seems to always divide. I'm not based on my politics. I don't even know what politics I'm in. Talk to me as a person. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason I wanted to start doing this. Mm-hmm. Just to talk to people, find out who they are. Because we are unique in some ways, but there's a lot in common. It's how we process it and deal with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. I think it's pretty important for anyone who's in a position of influence to be a role model, especially for young kids to look up to be as real and honest as possible. Because, you know, growing up and being in the spotlight for being a great athlete or overcoming adversity of having a disability or this or that, if you look at any Olympian or Paralympian, mainly actually Olympians, let's start there. So if you look at Olympians, how many people actually get inspired to change their life watching the Olympics? I would not call them inspiring, because inspiring means you're going to get up and do something different. They are entertaining. They are, holy shit, I can't believe that human who has this crazy, weird X-Men of a body can do this feat. And I think that the Paralympics is a little bit different because people have disabilities, but if you don't see the human struggle. If you just see the physical disability, you're not going to relate to that either. And so I started to realize, you know, I was getting up and making presentations and speeches to schools or to different organizations, and no one was relating or identifying to me because I was talking about how to be a great athlete, my experience winning gold medals, what it's like to have the national anthem. I'm like, what? Like, this might be entertaining for somebody, but this isn't going to inspire anybody. Like, you can only be inspired or moved or changed by things you can relate to. So my whole speech has changed dramatically. And I wonder sometimes if the people who've asked me to come are like, what the hell is she talking about? This isn't what we asked for. Because I don't talk about swimming or winning or anything like that. You know, I talk about the human side of things and struggling, mm-hmm. being insecure, overcoming adversity. Like, you know, that's what really moves people's connection. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just from like a, you know, moral standpoint, but just from a responsibility standpoint, recognizing if you're somebody who is in a position of influence or power or to be a role model for others, to be as real. What? Are you laughing?
I know, I bumped the table.
But anyways, yeah, just to be real and honest. So I try and shed as many of the dirty, dark bits as possible with people in my presentations, especially with kids, because, yeah, you don't want them to think, oh, I could never be like her. She's got it all together. She's happy all the time or whatever.
Yeah. And I think it creates a false expectation.
That's it.
Well, that's it for this episode. We hope you had fun and maybe even learned something. The Horse is brought to you by Molotov and Brick Tattoos and J.L. Hamilton Productions. Until next time, remember to be kind to yourself and to others.
This was a Brain Freeze podcast.